Hello and welcome to the locker room on Indie Live Radio. This is funnily enough, the locker room. We're here for the next hour speaking about sport, Michael McCune and Matthew Lingard. Hi, Matthew.
Hi, yeah, and we promise everybody that this show is not the same as 3 weeks ago.
No,
So,
exactly. Yeah, we're going to be sensible for once.
yeah, due to technical problems, our favourite show has been going out for the last 3 weeks. It was Michael's choice.
Yeah, exactly. We had a few technical issues the last couple of weeks, but hopefully you enjoyed the show when you hear get back on the podcast or
Our
whatever.
greatest hits.
Yeah, that'll be coming out at Christmas. So it's been a busy week again for Scottish football and European action, Matthew.
Yeah, no, it was busy. We've had, I mean, Scottish football, I think, has went through. Well, it was a funny thing because wearing Scottish football at the start of the week, anyway, could you say that all Scottish sides were still in European competition? And not only that, all four of them were going to play on the one evening last night. So, like for Scottish football generally, even well before the scores obviously came in and looking at it from the outside, and it was quite positive for Scottish football. And I think it's the first time since maybe I've left high school, possibly, that Scotland had had all four teams still left in the competitions in one go and playing in one night. So from that side, before we get to the scores, that was quite positive. And all teams were nearly in Europe into October. So, and I know COVID kind of changed that a little bit, but still it was a some achievement.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a bit disappointing how none of the teams will be in the playoff round apart from Celtic and Rangers in the Europa Cup. So let's start off with Celtic because they were on first last night, Matthew.
Yeah, and first, I mean, it kind of put you off the next games, didn't it? I mean,
Yeah.
watching that one initially was like a slog. I don't, it was 90 minutes, but it felt like your whole life had flashed before you.
Well, I mean, if the bingo was open, I could have went to the bingo, but you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, would you believe my daughter had made me buy a turtle, and watching the turtle in the living room was more entertaining than watching that last night.
A turtle in your house? Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, with two dogs, would you believe? Things you thought you'd never hear.
Yeah, in the sports show, but there
Yeah,
you go, we're the first, and they might be the last.
yeah. To get back to Celtic, who Taylor even managed to move more slower than this tortoise in the house. Basically, I mean, it was one of those things. I mean, I think Celtic won, which was the main thing. I think we said this last week about Celtic. The main thing was that Celtic won and went through to the next round. And if you're clinging on to any positives from that game, I think the main thing was obviously Celtic won. The side really toiled for large spells against Latvian champions Riga until finally, would you believe, the 89th minute, Elin Jussi, who came off the bench earlier, really spared Celtic's blushes and saved Celtic really 30 minutes, if not more, of work that they didn't really need to do with extra time and possibly penalties to score the winner to go through. Frimpong crossed the ball for Elin Jussi to score his third goal of the season so far. Frimpong was my man of the match, to be honest. When he came on for Forest, he was just a breath of fresh air. He was taking on people, he was getting crosses in, everything really that a wing back should do, and everything that unfortunately Taylor never did. And now Celtic will move on to play Sarajevo next week in the playoff ground, playoff round.
And the first game's away from home, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's I mean, Celtic have unfortunately, I think it means now Rangers as well. Not to give away the scores if you haven't heard them, but Rangers and Celtic will have to move their Premier League games next week to move into that to move into a Sunday spot because obviously they'll play on the Thursday in the playoffs. But I think Neil Lennon, is just going to be relieved after that one. I think Riga basically had. I mean, I've never really seen. I mean, I've watched Scottish football for a long time, but I've never seen anything like it. Riga obviously put nearly every man behind the ball in a sort of 4-4-2 situation. Celtic nearly had, what, 80, 90% of possession. It was something ridiculous like that. But I just thought they were lacking. I thought Celtic maybe gave Riga possibly too much respect. I thought Taylor, obviously, I think, who spent most of the time in the other half, wasn't really up to doing what a sort of wing-back should do. In this sort of game, I thought Elanussi obviously came on and scored, but I thought he might have made more of an impact playing as a left wing back in this sort of game. I thought, again, Scott Brown could have been left out and just to give maybe another player another chance that, who was more attacking minded. Just because I thought Celtic really did give Riga too much respect there. I thought Ayeti could have played as well instead of maybe Ncham, because I think a second striker in the box would have made the difference, given that Riga were camping in there. But because I think Celtic did play, you know, Scott Brown, McGregor, Ncham, Taylor, all these sorts of players, one striker up top, really. I think Celtic had a lot of possession around about their box, but didn't really make a lot of impact in the penalty box. And because of that, it became a bit more complicated than it should have done. But like I said, I think if we had a wing-back like Frimpong on the left-hand side, I think if we had another striker in there instead of Ncham, and I think if Brown maybe was dropped for a more attacking midfielder, whoever that might be, then I think they might have had a better chance there going in there, because it was obvious that Riga were just going to park the bus, and they did.
I think it's all about, you know, not to make any excuses up for any of the Scottish teams in Europe. And let's face it, it wasn't a brilliant game, but it's a bit like when we talk about the cup football here, whether it's the Scottish Cup or the League Cup, it's all about getting the job done. In saying that, Celtic was maybe 2 minutes away from going into extra time. And to be honest, Matthew, against the opposition, that would be a bit embarrassing.
Yeah, I mean, going the way that game was going, I think if it had got to extra time, there was no guarantees that Celtic were going to score. I mean, it was that sort of game. It could have went all the way to penalties. That's what Riga really were after. And at penalties, obviously, it's a bit of a lottery as to who goes through. So I think maybe when I saw the team being announced last night or yesterday afternoon, I just kind of knew this was what was going to happen. I mean, you knew that Celtic would have a lot of the ball. You knew they'd flood the midfield. You knew that Riga would sit back. But you just thought, you know, will Taylor finally beat a man and get a cross in? The answer was probably no. Forrest obviously hasn't been at his best up to now, but when he was injured and Frimpong came on, you knew what you were going to get from Frimpong. And he obviously, up to near the end of the game, was the only guy who showed any spark, in my opinion, to get past your man and get balls into the box. But obviously, Edward was the only one in there. Now, if you're going to get guys like Frimpong to get to the byline and get crosses in, Edward's maybe not your best man to be in there, but surely Ayeti is, because Ayeti's definitely just a penalty box sort of player and he will score those sorts of goals. But of course, he wasn't there. Edward wasn't at his best, whether he's unfit or whether something else is going on, we don't really know. He wasn't at his best, but to me, the team again was wrong. And you know, even the guy from Motherwell that we just signed, I mean, he could have came in and made the difference, mm-hmm. but he was sitting on the bench. So I think he could have been given a chance instead of Brown, because I mean, in my opinion, you could have had three at the back. One of them was Beaton, who I never mentioned him actually, but I thought Beaton actually played quite well. But when Celtic have a lot of the ball, Beaton obviously can push up a bit to midfield to add to that complement. That would then mean that Beaton and McGregor are kind of holding. And then you have Frimpong and maybe one other, who I thought should have been Elanussi, pushing down the left-hand side. Obviously, then you've got players like Christie in there who can make a difference going forward. And then Ayeti and Edward could have complemented that. And obviously, Riga would have still sat. And then it would have been up to Celtic to break it down. But I think Celtic just showed them, like I said, too much respect and sat a lot of time in the midfield area between the midfield and the box. Didn't really seem to create much. And what's the saying about too many cooks ruin the food or whatever? That kind of sums up Celtic midfield to me, because it seems like Lennon just wants to fit all his best midfielders in there and leave the striking spare. And it's worrying. To me, the performance is worrying. Even though Celtic did win, the performance wasn't up to much. And then when you see obviously what Rangers went to the went and did afterwards, you realise Celtic have a lot of work to do in Europe and in the league.
Yeah, so Rangers was a later kickoff last night, Matthew, and they won 4-0 away from home. And I never got a piece of the game last night, but 4-0 away from home, no matter who you're playing in Europe, it's a good win, and they're scoring goals for fun.
Yeah, I mean, I think before the game, when we were looking at the percent, say if you were looking at betting percentages, I would have said Celtic were nearly a shoo-in to go through, and they made a bit of a mess of it, even though they did go through. I thought Motherwell and Aberdeen would go out, but Rangers had a difficult tie. I mean, I thought it was 50-50 as to what Rangers could do, and it wasn't because I thought Rangers would struggle or anything because of themselves. I just thought, you know, their opposition are a very good Dutch side who aren't that far off that sort of top tier of Dutch football. They're maybe just below that tier. So to see Rangers pretty clinically go past them and set up a playoff tie against Galatasaray at home was a bit of a shock. But I thought Rangers were brilliant. I thought they just clinically knocked them out. They didn't really look in any danger from start to finish. They had McGregor back in goal. And I mean, for me, I think he's Rangers' best keeper. And he sort of brings a bit of confidence to that back line that maybe McLaughlin doesn't give. And Rangers, like I said, didn't look in any danger. James Tavernier had a penalty quite early on, and I think that was his 50th goal for the club overall. Ryan Kent then pounced on a goalkeeping mistake a few minutes after that to make it 2-0. And even at 2-0, you kind of thought, well, that's the game, I'd say, over. And then obviously, headers from Hollander and Goldson added to a pretty comprehensive win for Rangers. And like I said, they didn't look in any danger. They were really impressive. And now they go on to meet Galatasaray, who, even though they're a big team still in Turkey, and maybe, I wouldn't say they're favourites, but on paper, that you think, oh God, Galatasaray are some side. Rangers, after last night's performance, should be confident of beating anybody, because I thought it was really, really positive from them.
And just to remind people listening to this, it's back to the kind of old way of doing things now in the next round. It's a playoff, so it's home and away. First leg and second leg as well. So good luck to Celtic and Rangers. That's like a bit disappointing, Matthew, when it came to Aberdeen and Motherwell.
Well, I think Aberdeen was disappointing because, I mean, I know Sporting Lisbon, you're thinking, oh goodness, that's one of the world's top sides or one of Europe's top sides or top clubs. But they've had a lot of trouble with COVID. Their team was pretty depleted, I think, due to COVID, and even their management team and coaching team were set down with COVID. So Aberdeen went in there really with a bit of a chance. But sadly, you know, they did bow out. But I thought they did okay. They played well. They gave their all, really. Like I said, they missed. Sporting Lisbon kind of missed half a dozen of their team. But they conceded a goal quite early on by Thomas. And I think that kind of maybe put a spanner in Aberdeen's game plan, as he did score quite early on. But Aberdeen remained in the game. They did look like they troubled Sporting Lisbon with a few chances of their own. But sadly, I think that's the sixth time in 7 years Aberdeen have dropped out at this qualifying stage. So they've got previous on it. And the 1-0 defeat, even though it wasn't embarrassing, I think just because of the COVID situation, it was a bit disappointing because Sporting Lisbon really were there for the taking last night. And I think the early goal just knocked Aberdeen's stride a little bit.
And also at the same time as the Celtic game, Motherwell was playing as well, but they had an awful night because not only did they get beat 3-0, but they got a man sent off as well.
Yeah, and that's how they're tied in. I mean, Hapoel Beersheva are quite a decent side in Israel, so I didn't really expect Motherwell to go there and get anything, to be perfectly honest. And obviously, they scored first to make it 1-0 before, I think the second was a penalty, and that was when the red card happened after conceding the spot kick. So it was 1-0. Then I think it was Declan Gallagher sort of got a second yellow, conceded the spot kick, and then it went 2-0. And by that time, it was probably too much, really, for Motherwell to get back into it with 10 men and being 2-0 down. Also, it was very hot there last night, from what I understand as well. So, I mean, obviously, you know Motherwell quite well, and I know Motherwell quite well. And if it is, if it's anything over, you know, 15, we're boiling. So it was difficult for them in the hot conditions and playing a team who are quite good to, and they went on obviously and won 3-0. Motherwell didn't embarrass themselves. I think it was okay. And Beersheva will go through and they'll play a Czech side in the playoff round next Thursday. But Motherwell were underdogs, and given they were a team who are used to playing in Europa League group stages, I mean, like I said, they are a top side. And they have got European experience. I think the experience more than the result will bode Motherwell quite well. And they shouldn't be ashamed of themselves really going in to play Rangers this weekend. But yeah, it's sad that Motherwell did go out, but it wasn't, I don't think it was expected of them that they were going to be able to sadly go through.
Okay, let's look at this weekend's games then, Matthew. And you mentioned that game on Sunday at Fir Park. I think that'll be an early kickoff again, Motherwell against Rangers.
Yeah, I mean, this game's going to be pretty good. I mean, I think Motherwell, like I said, even though 3-0 on paper doesn't really look good, I think they did do quite well going into Beersheva. And to be honest, I think the result that makes me think it could be a tough game for Rangers was last weekend. You know, Motherwell went in against Aberdeen and managed to win 3-0 at Pittodrie last weekend. And what was, I don't think it was a shock, because I think Motherwell are playing quite well. But I think for Aberdeen, they were coming into that in really good form too, and Motherwell went there and won. Rangers obviously are coming off a decent win in Holland, but they obviously were held 2-2 by Hibernian last weekend in a game that took a lot off them, really, physically, because Hibs did get in their faces and battle away. So I think Motherwell know what they have to do against Rangers, and from what it seems to be, Rangers don't like when teams get up in their faces. They don't like the battle. Morelos can get angry. Kent can get a bit angry. Some of the Rangers staff, obviously, as well, get a bit angry too. So I think Motherwell know that if they're going to get anything from Rangers, it's not by playing against them 11-11 and hoping something will happen, because Rangers showed last night their quality. If teams do that, I think the only way really to beat Rangers is to get in their faces, wind them up, try and battle against them and go from there. And, you know, Motherwell, if they do that, will have a chance. But like I say, it's tough. I mean, Rangers have had a really good season up to now. Their European campaign's been good. And it's looking like it could be an interesting game to watch at Fir Park.
And also, you were saying about the background team. I presume that you were interviewing Gerrard, because it's been pulled up a complaint I was making against him, I think. And it's been suspended by the SFA.
Well, he's nearly that's every week. I mean, the first one obviously was the Dundee United game, and Rangers obviously won that game 4-0 quite convincingly as well. But Rangers obviously, Gerrard wasn't happy because there was a few tackles flying in there. Four players got injured, one of which was Morelos, who had that sort of gash in his leg that we all saw afterwards. And he was stretchered off after Ryan Edwards, who did leave that little cut above his right knee. And I think Gerrard was basically hinting that it should have been a red card, and Gerrard was suggesting that if maybe Morelos had done that and it was the other way around, that would have been a red card. So he was hinting that maybe there was a bit of bias there. Mm-hmm. And that really, and because of that, he's been charged by the Scottish FA over the comments. But, you know, the next week they played Hibs at Easter Road. Hibs obviously got in their faces. There was a few incidents that were never red cards. I think they were just hard challenges. And Gerrard was obviously not happy with them. He wasn't happy with Porteous. Daring to think that one of the Rangers players were maybe bad losers. So he was getting involved in stuff like that. And to be honest, I think for me, it's a bit annoying, because Steven Gerrard's obviously won a lot in the game as a player. He's won the European Cup. He's won the FA Cup. He's won the League Cup. He never won the Premier League because he slipped against Chelsea, but he never had a pop about that, strangely enough. So he's won the top tournaments in the game. To me, there's no need to get involved in this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to prove himself as a player or a manager, but he seems to be getting involved in all these petty sorts of things that he just doesn't need to. Yeah, and it's a bit annoying.
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, it's a big season for Rangers, they need to stop Celtic getting 10 and Celtic needs to get 10 to appease their fans. You would think he would concentrate more on the football instead of mouthing off every week, as it were.
Yeah, I mean, the first one, like we said, I mean, Rangers beat Dundee United 4-0. I mean, was there any reason to get involved in that? Probably not. I didn't think any tackles at Ibrox was actually a red card that day either. I didn't think there was any red cards at Easter Road either the next week, but he gets involved as well.
I mean, do you know what, Amasia, the weird thing about all this is that was an excellent win for Rangers, right, against United, because, you know, Dundee United was playing well up to that point. And yet, Rangers ran it 4-0 and they were still kind of mourning about it. But
definitely.
Know.
Definitely. I mean, there was just no need. And Easter Road, I mean, they did draw 2-2, but I didn't think I thought that was a good result for Rangers, to be perfectly honest. I mean, I thought that, you know, Hibs were playing really well up to that point too. Easter Road is not a easy place to go. Rangers did score 2 goals, but Hibs obviously managed to, well, they took the lead, and then obviously they conceded an equaliser after going 2-1 up. But for me, you know, Hibs obviously were battling. Joe Newell, Gogic were actually really battling in that midfield area. And Rangers, even though they were asked serious questions, they responded well. They got control of the game when they needed to. Obviously, they could have maybe scored a couple more goals because they had a few chances that maybe they failed to convert. But generally, you know, in any other normal season, a 2-2 draw against the Hibs side that were playing amazingly well and were battling was quite good. But again, you know, he came off the pitch and was moaning about it and moaning about Hibs getting stuck in their faces. But I don't quite know what Gerrard expects, because Rangers obviously have got the second biggest budget in Scottish football. They've got on paper, they've got the second best squad, if not joint best squad in Scottish football. How do they expect teams like Hibs to compete? Because do they expect Hibs to just go out and roll over and get beat because they've got the worst side out of the two? Or do they expect, obviously, like he would have expected if he was on the Hibs side, to go in and try and get a result the only way you know you can? And that's by obviously standing up and fighting against this Rangers team.
You were talking about Hibs there, Matthew. You actually set me up nicely for the game at Parkhead on Sunday at 3 o'clock. And I'm looking forward to this one, actually. Just because Hibs came off a good result against Rangers last week at Easter Road. They're playing Celtic at Celtic Park on Sunday, and that should be a good game. Especially Celtic won, well, convincing, you would say, on Saturday. But the second half performance was a bit iffy. They were letting Livingston back into the game and they lost a kind of late goal.
It makes me laugh because it was just basically the kind of performance that we were just describing a minute ago from Celtic. I mean, Celtic don't seem to have got going at all. I mean, this game they made life completely hard for themselves for no apparent reason. Yeah. I mean, they did win 3-2 and they were winning 3-1 at one point through McGregor, Christie and Ayeti. But obviously the defending has got a lot to be desired. And even though the strike from Serrano for Livingston was unbelievable, I thought Celtic had the chance to close him down before he got the shot even off. And, you know, everybody's kind of looking at each other to go, you get him, no, you close him down, no, you close him down. And before they've decided who is to do the closing down, the boy has got his strike off. And even though, like I said, it was a good goal, defensively it was poor. And goalkeeping, you know, I mean, I don't know if you can blame Barkas for that kind of goal, but he did get a hand to it, and you thought maybe a sturdier hand might have dealt with that as well. But they should have killed off Livingston, and they didn't. And I think, again, like I said yesterday, they struggled a little bit, and they're coming up against the Hibs side, who are in top form. Like I said, if Hibs come in here, Hibs, I would expect would do the same. I think they'll maybe will play a 4-4-2. They'll get in Celtic's faces. You'll have people like Gogic and Yule in the midfield who'll battle against Brown and Christie and McGregor. And I think, like we were talking about last week, I think it's a challenge for Hibs to see if they can now take what they did against Rangers and do that at Celtic Park and do it in Glasgow generally. So it'll be good for Hibs, I think, to test themselves on that stage. But it'll be a challenge for Celtic as well to see if they can come up against one of the top sides in Scotland at the moment and get a win, because Rangers showed how difficult it can be to play against Hibs. And going on the performance on yesterday, it'll be a challenge for Celtic to perform against Hibs as well. So and we'll see.
I mean, when Neil Lennon was at Hibs last year, Neil Lennon had a decent record against Celtic. In fact, did they not beat them a few times at Easter Road?
Yeah, they did. And, I mean, Neil Lennon, he showed at Hibs really what he can do with a side of a lesser budget. And I think he's obviously, he managed to do quite well at Hibs. At the end, it was tailing off a bit. And I think that was because Hibs obviously were at a point where you thought they either can stay where they are or they can push on and see what they can do. And obviously Hibs at the time didn't want to spend any extra budget to try and push on. And that kind of cheesed Neil Lennon off. Now, Hibs have obviously shown what they can do with that budget since Lennon's left, because Hibs haven't really spent much more than when Lennon was there, and look at them now. But also Neil Lennon, you know, he's got this temper about him too at Hibs, and I think he would get frustrated with the players and start talking out of turn. He's got previous for it. And, you know, I don't want to prejudge anything, but Celtic look like a team that have maybe got a bit of problems behind the scenes, and you wonder if it's the pressure getting to Lennon.
Yeah. Oh, well, then we'll watch the game closely.
It's a game of the weekend. It's a game of the weekend. I, like you, I cannot wait. I mean, we've got the Motherwell Rangers game before it, which will be good on Sky. But then, you know, if Rangers win, Celtic will go into that knowing they have to probably win to keep the pressure on Rangers. But Hibs obviously will know what they have to do as well. So that game looks like it could be really tasty at Celtic Park. And if Hibs do what they did last weekend against Rangers, then Celtic are in for a fight. So it could be one of these few times in Scottish football where Celtic have a real battle on their hands at Parkhead.
So let's look at the other games quickly before we move on. The three games tomorrow, Hamilton against Dundee United, Livingston against St Johnstone, and St Mirren is at home to Kilmarnock.
Yeah, I mean, I think those games, I mean, the Hamilton-Dundee United game will be interesting. I think Hamilton will obviously be looking to stabilise their form a little bit, but Dundee United as well. You know, Dundee United managed to beat St Mirren last week, which was a big result in their season, because obviously I'd say the top four are cemented a little bit. I mean, I think Aberdeen, your Hibs, are pretty safe. I think below that there could be anybody could go down at this point or be in our sort of relegation battle after that. So teams playing in that sort of bracket will be looking to get any sort of point advantage they can, even in September going into October. So Dundee United's trip to Hamilton looks quite good. But again, Livingston, St Johnstone and St Mirren Kilmarnock are similar ones. It's almost like your early... I mean, looking at the fixtures, it's almost like your bottom split already. Saturday, you've got the teams you would maybe expect to be in the bottom half of the table. And Sunday, you're looking at the teams that you probably expect to be in the top half at the table. So it's like an early door split already.
Yeah, so we'll go see what happens on Saturday. So it's time for a new feature on the show, Matthew's NFL Roundup. I gave you the big build-up then. I'm sorry that we never gave you a jingle, just because we've not got much of a budget on the show or any.
And I feel you've bigged me up for something that's going to be deeply disappointing.
Okay. And that was the end of Marsh's roundup. More next week.
Oh, God. Well, I mean, the NFL's obviously back in full swing, and I mean, I'm a bit annoyed with myself because I do fantasy football, and me and a few friends do a sort of pick'em thing, which is you try and choose the results. And last night, I had Jacksonville Jaguars to beat Miami Dolphins, and I thought it was assuring to be Jacksonville managing to come away with the win. But in true COVID fashion, it's really difficult to predict these games at the moment. And Miami absolutely destroyed Jacksonville Jaguars last night. So I'm a bit disappointed that basically my fantasy football season or my fantasy football weekend's over already before it's even begun. But I picked up a few games, obviously, or chose a few games this weekend that I think will be quite good. And my game of the weekend, really, this week is Kansas City Chiefs at Baltimore Ravens. The Kansas City Chiefs have had issues, really, with the run defence this year. And I think Jacksonville have a quarterback in Lamar Jackson that will probably push the Kansas City Chiefs to the ultimate, really, because if you're struggling with the run, Lamar Jackson is going to run at you. So I think this game will be quite interesting to see if Kansas City try and defend against that. Baltimore obviously will try and win by controlling the football as well. So with Lamar Jackson running the ball, they'll have the ball a lot more in their hands, and it will keep Patrick Mahomes off the pitch a lot more, who is really the danger man for Kansas City. So I think you'll find that Baltimore Ravens will have the ball quite a lot, and then it's just whether when Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill get the ball for Kansas City Chiefs, are they able to turn that into scores and try and outplay Jackson at a later time. So it's going to be a pretty interesting game, and I think it'll be a high scoring game with the two best quarterbacks in the league. I have a sneaky feeling the Baltimore Ravens will beat the Super Bowl champions. I just have a feeling that the Baltimore Ravens defense will handle Patrick Mahomes better than the Kansas City Chiefs defense will handle handle Lamar Jackson. So I think I can see a bit of a shock here on paper with the Baltimore Ravens winning. The next game, I know you're going to say, "Oh, Matt, oh, God."
There you go. You heard it here first.
The next game I chose was the New England Patriots against the Oakland Raiders. Cam Newton is the quarterback for the New England Patriots, and he is basically looking pretty good. Last week he did okay against the Seattle Seahawks, and he's going into this one against the Raiders. Derek Carr is obviously the Raiders quarterback, and he's looking quite good as well. So it could be an interesting game, but I have a feeling, obviously, Bill Belichick will be focusing on trying to stop Derek Carr as much as he can. And I think, again, Cam Newton will, being at home, will maybe show again his quality. So I've got the Patriots to win against the Raiders. And then the Cowboys at the Seahawks is quite a decent game as well, especially when there's crowds in there. There isn't this time, but Seahawks are probably the loudest fans in the country. And playing, obviously, they've got Russell Wilson as a quarterback who is one of the best in the business, and he's performing basically his own category of quarterback the way he plays at the moment. And he's up against Prescott, who, even though they're paid about the same amount of money, hasn't really set the world on fire as much as Russell Wilson have. The Cowboys probably look like they've maybe got a few more holes to fill around the linebackers, more than the Seahawks will do, probably. And I think if Elliott can keep the ball away from the Seahawks and maybe run the ball a bit more, they might have a chance. But I've got the Seahawks to win that game against the Cowboys, mainly because I've got a soft spot for the Seattle Seahawks, having seen them in the Super Bowl in 2014. So I've got a soft spot for them. So I think the Seahawks will win that one. But again, it's good games this weekend. Chiefs at Ravens, Raiders at Patriots, and Cowboys at Seahawks will be two or three crackers.
Is the fans still getting into the NFL, Matthew? Yeah,
some of them are. It's to do with the states they're in. Some states are allowing fans to go in, and some states are not allowing fans to go in. So it depends. Like Florida, Kansas City teams, they are getting some fans into the grounds, but other fans like New York Giants and New York Jets aren't getting any fans in because they're in New Jersey. So it just depends what state they're in. But I mean, it seems to be working. But then, obviously, COVID rates are quite high in the states. So, is it the right thing? I don't know. We can go into that with regards to Scottish sports in a second. But I don't know whether it's the right thing to allow fans in at the moment. It's one of those things.
Yeah, let's do that now then, Matthew. you're setting me up nicely. Thanks for that.
It's not like me.
Yeah, so the last couple of weeks we were talking about the fans might be allowed back in on the 17th of October. But because of their new rules this week coming from the, well, the Scottish government, the fans will be that they will be put back till after next year at some time or whatever. So, yeah, what do you think, Matthew? Disappointed with that or?
I'm obviously gutted. I mean, we were all kind of hoping that the fans would be able to come back in. We were all kind of talking about maybe some fans being in for the Celtic Rangers game coming up on the 17th of October, which is, like I always like to say, is our flagship game and not just Scottish football.
And by the way, this is the first Old Firm game. I believe it's got to be played behind closed doors.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's devastating because, I mean, like I said, that's our flagship game in Scotland, full stop, I think. So to have no fans at it will be pretty devastating.
I think Sky TV would be a bit annoyed to get that as well.
Well, there'll be more Rangers fans than Celtic fans in there, given the Sky Sports commentary team. So they'll maybe have an upper hand. But I'm saying nothing anymore. I've already said it, so...
Yeah. You can't kick it back now, Mavri.
I think it's common knowledge at this point. Celtic Rangers will have Boyd and McCoist, and Celtic will have Andy Walker shouting for us, sort of shouting for Celtic. So I think Celtic are in deep trouble. I think Boyd on his own would win that battle, let alone McCoist added into it as well. But it's disappointing generally. I mean, I think, like I said, we were all looking forward to some fans being back in for that Celtic Rangers game. And, you know, it just now moves on to the Celtic Rangers game at Ibrox in January or December, whenever the date is, to hope that there's some fans in there to try and make it a bit more atmospheric. But, you know, we were nearly there. And unfortunately, I think COVID's kind of coming back for a bit of a, you know, second round. You know, and therefore, because coronavirus cases have been rising across the country generally, test events will be on hold. And I think, therefore, because of that, phased return of supporters will take a bit longer. And it seems to me that, you know, a lot of the sports now are bracing for themselves to be maybe no spectators at all into the winter months, if not into spring next year. And that's extremely disappointing, you know. And it's not just obviously football. World Rugby is extremely worried that if the Six Nations don't get crowds, what will that mean for the Scottish Rugby Association or Scottish Rugby Union? Some unions could go bust in the world. I mean, I don't think the SRU will go bust, but some rugby unions will go bust without government help if there's no crowds allowed in. And I think there's been an estimated loss of more than £100 million if playing fans are excluded from the Six Nations. So it's not a small amount. And obviously, £100 million will be lost. But, I mean, that includes not just, obviously, fans coming through the door and paying tickets and paying for programmes and all that kind of thing. But obviously, with the Six Nations, cities like Edinburgh will be hit because Edinburgh's hotel economy... A lot of the winter months are tied in with things like the Six Nations, and fans come from all around the world to watch the Six Nations and stay in Edinburgh. So it will hit city economies as well as rugby unions. Obviously, for Scottish football, though, some clubs will have obviously budgeted for no fans until Christmas. But because there's no guarantee if fans will return after Christmas, a lot of the clubs will be panicking as to whether they have a future or not. I mean, especially Championship, League One and League Two, whose revenue are nearly 100% made up of ticket revenues, they'll be very worried about that. So maybe not your Hearts, but anybody below your Hearts and Dundees, I think, will be really concerned if no fans return. And obviously, there's talk of if fans don't return to especially League One or Two, is there a point of having a league season? Because they can't afford it. We can't afford to have that in Scotland.
And plus, it's going to be a shortened season anyway, Matthew, isn't it? So,
yeah. The Scottish Premier League's bad enough because I think, what was it? Was it 42% of Scottish Premier League fan revenue is generated by fans? Now, that's one of the worst in Europe for just being solely reliant on fans coming through the door. So, you know, for Scottish Premier League, 42% of that's gone from the off. But then because the games are on TV, they've been able to sell season tickets and virtual season tickets and stuff like that to implement that. But
I mean, even one of our clubs in Scotland, Matthew, Stephen Robertson, came out on Tuesday, I think it was, when they were speaking ahead of the European game, saying that basically he's worried about Motherwell, and that's one of our kind of like top teams, if you like, in the Premier League, because you think that the only way that they can get money is the fans. You know, because it's fans owned them in. But the other side of it is as well, I don't know if you saw this, Matthew, the Ross County chairman, Roy McGregor, came out this week, and he's basically said, and I'm surprised, surprised in a good way, because you would think, personally speaking, Ross County is doing well, they're punching above the weight sometimes in the big league, but Roy McGregor has basically come out and said that he would help most of the teams. I presume that he means Inverness and other teams like that. Obviously, because they're in the first division, so you know that's a nice gesture. Yeah.
Oh, definitely. And it's funny you bring up Motherwell, because if you think about that as well, if Motherwell hadn't have sold Turnbull to Celtic, where would Motherwell have been? But not, I mean, Motherwell, you can even go up to Aberdeen. You know, Aberdeen this week sold Scott McKenna to Nottingham Forest from Aberdeen. Now, I think the clubs were, could have been in the region of £3 million with £2 million add-ons. But again, you know, Aberdeen are obviously one of the top sides in the country, and they seem to be struggling as well if they're not able to sell players. But then if you move down a bit to the lower leagues, you know, and you're obviously thinking nearly 100% of their revenue is brought in by ticket revenue. How are they going to survive? And I think, you know, you're thinking, God, the seasons might have to be cut because they can't afford to play players. They can't afford to do COVID tests, which is what we were kind of talking about way at the start of this.
Yeah.
But they can't, obviously, as well, they'll need TV cameras, because if fans are going to pay season ticket revenue of any way, they're going to have to find ways of watching that game. So they'll have to pay to set up internet connection. They'll have to pay to set up TV cameras. They'll have to pay to do all that. So I'd say, you know, I think up to now, I think we spoke about this before, the Ice Hockey League has cancelled its whole season because they rely on spectators only. The Highland Football League are talking about not going ahead because they rely on ticket revenue only. And then you think, well, the next stage up of that is, what does that mean for League One and League Two? And ultimately the Championship, what does that mean? Because they rely ultimately on ticket revenue as well. And the fans aren't getting in till January, February, March time, you know, while these seasons sadly happen. And you're hoping that it's a yes, but it's looking a bit dodgy at the moment as to whether that'll happen or not.
Yeah, I think it's a debate that we'll come back to week after week after week again and stuff like that, you know, so watch this space. Give us a quick mention about the boxing, Matthew. The boxing match on tomorrow night, and it's involving Edinburgh-born Scotsman Josh Taylor. He's fighting in the WBA say that again. Matthew, there you go.
I will attempt to say light welterweight. Yeah, is that the word you're at? Yeah.
Well done.
See when somebody struggles to say that and then it comes to you to say it, you also therefore struggle. That was quite difficult, so thanks for that.
Yeah, I should have said that before the show that we're going to speak about boxing, but it just suddenly there occurred to me. But yeah, he's fighting tomorrow night in London for the world title fight. So good luck to Josh Taylor there.
Is that on any TV, I wonder, or is that just... Or is it BBC Sport?
a BBC Sport website and the app as well. But apart from that, I don't see it being on, you know, like the main TV channels like BT, Sky, BBC, Scotland Channel or whatever. So if you want to keep up to date, tomorrow night on the BBC website or the BBC app. But yeah, good luck to Josh and I hope he wins.
Well, he's I think he's from near enough the same area as Hibs, so you might have him winning, and then if Hibs can win at the weekend too, you've got a decent sort of party going on round about Leith over the weekend if Josh does win. So
I wouldn't mention about parties at the moment, Matt.
Oh, don't.
you'll have Jason Rich on the phone. Jason Rich, no parties, please, in here. 2 meters apart.
I think well, Donegal's in lockdown as well just now at the moment, so I'll have to virtual party, I suppose, if a Scottish boxer does anything, but...
Moving on to tennis now, Matt. I mean, the sporting calendar is getting back up and running, like, but the sports is all over the shop because of the coronavirus and stuff like that. So the tennis, the French Open, was meant to be in June, July, I think it was, before Wimbledon, but now it's starting... next week, I presume.
You know, I would love if Chris Boyd could commentate on the tennis. I'm just thinking, watching his growling face as Andy Murray gets knocked out or something, that'd be hilarious. But I don't know why that came to mind.
I think Matthew forgets that we're live at the moment.
Sorry, what's it called? Brain farts, I think that's what I'm having at the moment.
This is a public announcement. I'm sorry for the swearing. Matthew's had a long week at work and I've just been here.
In all fairness, you had a conference as well, so you've been quite busy.
I did, yeah, that's my excuse, and I'm sticking to it. Thanks, Matthew.
Is that because you're so famous with this show, you've been asked to attend conferences?
If you were here, I would give you a high five, but you're not, so I'll email you and stuff. But yeah, so...
Wash your hands.
If you want to, moving swiftly on that, if you want to email us at any time, you can do that. No, Jason Leach can email us as well if he wants. The Locker Room at thelockerroomindylife@gmail.com. That's thelockerroomindylife@gmail.com. Yeah, so back to what I was speaking about about 10 minutes ago, about the tennis, Matthew.
About Chris Boyd. What can you say about Andy Murray? I mean, he has been drawn against Stan Wawrinka in the first round of the French Open. I think Wawrinka is a former champion, and Murray obviously, I think, played him a few years ago, possibly even in the French Open. And I think that was a pretty decent match. But obviously, I think after that, that was when Murray started to notice he had a problem with his right hip. And then obviously went on to undergo surgery, and that led to, therefore, the long winding road that he's had to get back to fitness. I think his opponent has also had injury troubles, and he's had operations on his knee and things like that as well after that tournament. So basically they played at it, and then they've both had serious injury problems since then and operations, and they've had a long winding road to get to this point. So for both of them really to be playing, it's good to have them back. It's just a shame that one of them will have to go out in the first round of the French Open when it's on. But I mean, for our sake, obviously we hope Andy Murray does it, and he's had a tough start after coming back, and has had a few defeats or a few unconvincing displays, but we're hoping now that he can maybe start on the road to maybe not winning tournaments. I think that sadly might be a bit beyond them now, but at least competing in tournaments and getting to the latter stages. And hopefully this game will be the start of that road for Andy Murray.
And also the looking at other British players after in the tennis. Liam Brady.
Oh no, not Liam Brady again.
Well, he's qualified for the French Open for the first time. And also Dan Evans. Every time I think of Dan, I always think of Alan Patrick. Dan,
I was thinking Dan. Desperate Dan.
That show is getting worse. and also Cameron Norrie, he's from Scotland, and Kyle Eggman is at the Grand Slam, which begins on Sunday. It's this coming Sunday. So over the next couple of weeks, we will do the show from France.
See, when you said Edmonds there, Mr. Blobby came to my head. I don't know what's going on in my head. that would make tennis great if Mr. Blobby was in that draw.
Oh, don't start. You've no idea. Yeah, so there
you don't want to come in my head.
No. Okay. I'm just trying my best to hold back my laughter here. But it's quite funny and stuff. So if just any complaints about the show so far tonight, you can email Ofcom. So there you go.
All right, it'll be only Chris Boyd. Just look in the mirror, mate. You won't be too angry.
So Matthew's making a five-a-side football team up. He's already got Chris Boyd in goals and Mr. Blobby is the defender.
You could actually play it in the Celtic back line. That would be an improvement going on what's been going on.
Okay. That's the tennis and the boxing sort of get then the I presume that the tennis will be on the TV, so we will keep you up to date with what is happening in terms of the tennis next week on the show. And good luck to Andy Murray and Mr. Blobby and Chris Boyd in the tennis this year.
There's also English Premiership action. I think that's the only thing we've not mentioned on this show so far.
Let's get back to that, Matthew, before you...
But we're still at early stages in the Premiership, so it's difficult to know what's going on. But I think, you know, last weekend Liverpool looked quite convincing winners over Chelsea. Going to Stamford Bridge, I think, is always a pretty difficult task, and they managed to go there and win convincingly. Now, probably the game of the weekend might be on the Monday. You know, Liverpool have actually got Arsenal at Anfield.
That's a very tasty game, Matt.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think that game's definitely the game of the weekend. Arsenal, I mean, Liverpool are obviously... What more can you say about Liverpool? I think we've been talking about how good they've been for a while on this show. Arsenal are the same. You know, I think since this show started was kind of the turnaround that Arsenal kind of needed since Arteta's been there. So since we've ran this show, Arsenal have been doing nothing but going upwards. So they come into this game on great form as well. So I think it'll be a decent challenge to see where Arsenal are at in their road to back to sort of Champions League places. And it'll be Liverpool. I was going to say it's Liverpool's big challenge, but they've had two big challenges. But if they come away having beaten Chelsea at Stamford Bridge and then beating Arsenal at Anfield going into October, then that's a pretty strong start from the champions. So it's a pretty decent game on the Monday. Before that is Fulham against Aston Villa, which is probably a relegation battle before we even start the season. So it's two quite interesting games at each end of the table on the Monday. On the Saturday, we've got Brighton Manchester United, and Man United haven't had the greatest of starts of the season, so they'll be looking to go down to Brighton and maybe get their season up and running. Crystal Palace, Everton. Again, Everton looked okay last week, weren't at their best against West Brom. So this will be quite difficult, I think, for them. West Brom, Chelsea, and Burnley, Southampton. And then on the Sunday, we have Sheffield United against Leeds, which is quite a tasty Yorkshire derby. And anybody who knows Yorkshire, I think you'll find that there could be pretty a lot of battles on that pitch. It might be, well, I think it might be more of a war zone than Hibs against Rangers. I know the Rangers players and some fans were saying that there was assaults and stuff taking place at Easter Road. I think this Sheffield United Leeds game, there could be actual assaults, because Yorkshire derbies are always quite interesting. Tottenham against Newcastle at White Hart Lane is another one. We've got Manchester City against Leicester, and then to finish off the Sunday, West Ham against Wolves. So some pretty decent games there. But again, Liverpool-Arsenal is, I think, the big one that everyone will be looking forward to this weekend, or the start of next week as it is.
And it's a bit unusual, Matthew, to have a kind of derby game at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it's not it's one of those ones that's not like a traditional City derby as such, but Sheffield United Leeds, I mean, Yorkshire's one of these working class minor sort of areas in the north of England, and they don't take fools easily really down in Yorkshire, so it's always quite good when you have a Sheffield United Leeds or Sheffield Wednesday Leeds game. So, I'm looking forward to that at Bramall Lane. I think it'll be quite a tasty encounter. But, that game and Man City-Leicester are probably your two good games on the Sunday. Brendan Rodgers trying to get Leicester on some sort of footing after that disastrous COVID return last season. So, they'll be looking to maybe try and do something against Man City. But I can see Man City winning that one. But Liverpool-Arsenal, like I said, is a big one, and we'll see where both of those teams are at, but I can see Liverpool winning that one.
Yeah, that should be a good game this weekend as well. So plenty of sport back now, Matthew. It's good to see, but the only difference is one day, hopefully, we'll see fans back in England and Scotland as well.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I mean, it's good that all these sports are back. I mean, the one thing that we did mention on this show that it makes me the saddest is, you know, British ice hockey is a really, really decent sport. Belfast Giants are quite close to me, and they here and they get around, 6,000, 7,000 people at it. They sell out their venue. You've obviously got the Glasgow Clan in your neck of the woods. I think they're also nearly sell out their venue nearly every time. And it's a real shame for 1 year only, because most of their revenue comes from supporters coming through the door. It's a real shame that this week, or the tail end of last week, they had to cancel their season. But fans are still coming out in their droves. You know, they put season tickets on sale for next year, would you believe? And fans are buying them. So fair play to the ice hockey fans out there for sticking beside their club through probably what is the most difficult thing they'll ever have to face.
And also, speaking about fans coming back, Matthew, I saw a bit about on the news all week about the name escapes me, the basketball player, The Rocks, the Blair Rocks, they're called, yeah? No.
Do they play at the Velodrome next to Celtic Park?
Yeah, they actually play at the Velodrome, but it was on the news all the week that they're unhappy because, like, they haven't started the season yet, Matthew, and they're thinking like they must be one of the last sports to kick off, and but there's not been.
You any, try kicking a basketball off.
Yeah. or tip off, whatever they say in basketball. But no, I mean, I think they're a bit annoyed at the Scottish government and stuff like that, because they haven't came out and said, to tip off the season. So on that note, I think we'll tip off another week, Matthew. thanks for joining us. As you stuck it out, well done. I don't know why you have. Well done. We'll be back next
Go off
week.
And kick off basketball. Oh.
Yeah. Matthew's away now to play football with Mr. Bobbing, Chris Boyd.
Damien Duff.
Well, they're all coming out, and Andy Webster as well. Don't
I'll
forget
we'll be
here every week on the Locker Room, and keep it here, and we'll see you next Friday here on Indie Live Radio.
Cheers, Michael.